You are going to be glad you came to church today, because I'm about to tell off on not just myself, your current preacher, but also on one of your former preachers. As many of you know, Devin Pickard and I were good friends growing up. And one of the things that Devin and I shared in common was a sense of humor. We like making people laugh. Devin was always a little more of an entertainer than me, but we both like to make people laugh. So Devin and I had a math class together in high school. And it happened one day that the teacher was called over the intercom to leave the room, to go to the front office. She was gone for a while, and everybody got bored, and I don't remember the exact circumstances, but after a while, Devin is up at the chalkboard entertaining. Being the good wingman that I was, I went to the door and stood guard watching for the teacher to come back. And so in the course of his entertainment, Devin runs his hands down that little tray that's at the bottom of the chalkboard, and he gets this big handful of chalk dust. And he is going to do the old gag where he's fake sneezes and blows that chalk dust into my face as I stand at the door. So as everybody's watching, he comes over to me with literally this much chalk dust. And he does a great fake sneeze. And this giant cloud of chalk dust comes right at my face, but it never gets to me because at that precise moment, the teacher walks in the door and stands right between us. Chalk dust in her hair, chalk dust in her ears, chalk dust in her eyes and in her mouth. She goes to pawing at her face there for a second to get it all out of the way as best she can. And then she glances at me and looks at Devin and says, "Sit down, stupid." Now, stupid was singular. So I assumed, and still do, that she was talking to Devin, not me. But she didn't seem to be in a good state at the moment, and so I went ahead and I sat down too. In Matthew 25, we have three parables told by Jesus. They all have their differences, but there is a common theme running throughout, and the theme is this: how we are to behave when the teacher's out of the room. Jesus is going to ascend to heaven, and he is going to leave his disciples down here on the earth. And he gives three parables here in Matthew 25 to tell us how we are to be behaving ourselves while he is away and until he comes back. He tells us what to do to get the pat on the head and the congratulations and maybe the gold star. And he also lays out some behavior that can get us at the wrong end of those fateful words, "Sit down, stupid." Let's notice how we are to conduct ourselves while the teacher is away. Let me say it three ways. First, while the teacher is away, use your time wisely. In the first 13 verses, we have the parable of the virgins, or the parable of the bridesmaids. 10 young women who were invited to have the honor of escorting a groom to a wedding ceremony, to a wedding feast. But the groom is delayed, and he comes a little late, and when he gets there, they're not ready. At least five of them aren't. It is hard to describe how important weddings were to first century Jews. I tried to think this week about how I might illustrate how big a deal this invitation to these 10 bridesmaids was. The best thing I could come up with was something that happened to me in the mid-90s. In the mid-90s, I was the head baseball coach for Hickman County High School. And my assistant coach was this flunky named Mike Smithson. And Mike and I became friends as we coached together for a few years. And we took the high school baseball team down to Florida for a week-long baseball camp at the Bucky Dent Baseball School. We were down there on about the second day, and Mike Smithson comes to me and says, "Hey, by the way, Kurt Gowdy invited us over for dinner tonight." Now, Kurt Gowdy was a legendary sports broadcaster. He had worked for all the major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS. He had been the lead broadcaster for Super Bowls, for seven World Series, for Olympics. He had seen and called on a national broadcast Ted Williams' last home run in his last at-bat with the Boston Red Sox. He had called Hank Aaron's home run at Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta when Aaron broke the all-time home run record. This man was a legend. And not only was I in awe of the sports end of it, but I had actually gone to Fried Hardeman hoping to be a sports broadcaster. That was what my major was. My sophomore year, I started taking broadcasting classes and realized I couldn't read fast enough to keep up with the teleprompter. And we were doing little broadcasts for the campus and the local area news broadcasts, and I was looking at the teleprompter in this class, teleprompter rather, and it would run off and leave me while I was reading news. I'd have to just make stuff up. I was giving out fake news before it was cool. And so I go to my advisor and I say, "Hey, I need a career where the words stand still." And he said, "Well, maybe you could preach." And I said, "Okay, well, so here we are." But I was in total awe of Kurt Gowdy. And we get in the car and we drive to his home in Palm Beach, Florida, behind in this gated community. We go to this home that is like nothing I'd ever been close to before. I looked it up on the internet, by the way. There's a picture of this house from the top looking down on it. It was for sale not too long ago. The asking price, $25 million. And we go to this house, and we are greeted at the front door by Kurt Gowdy and his wife, and we go in, and we sit at the table with them, and we eat with them and visit with them, because Mike knew him and was friends with him, of course, for a couple of hours. And I see this face that I had seen on national broadcast, and I hear this voice. This voice is asking me, "Mike, tell me about your career. Fried Hardeman, where was that? What position did you play? What'd you hit? What kind of player were you?" This man who had interviewed Ted Williams and Hank Aaron is asking me about my baseball career. Just incredible. Now let's back up a step and ask this. What if I wasn't ready to go? What if Mike had told me that morning, "Okay, now, it's an important man here, busy man. He wants us to be at his house at 6 o'clock. You be ready to go at 5. And suppose I wasn't ready. I had run out of sunscreen and I was out looking for some sunscreen and Mike couldn't find me. Imagine what a blunder that would have been. Take that and multiply it many, many, many times, and that's the blunder made by these five foolish bridesmaids who weren't ready when the groom showed up. And they ended up locked out of this huge wedding celebration. And so the message is clear here. While the teacher is out of the room, we need to be sure that we are ready for his return. There are two little girls I read about in elementary school, and one of them said to the other, "Hey, I hear the principal has announced that she's going to be coming into the classroom soon, and she's going to examine our desk, and she's going to see if they're clean and they're neat and they're organized." The other little girl said, "Well, you know what? I better get mine clean then. I think Friday, before I go home for the weekend, I'm going to clean mine up." Little girl said, "Well, what if she comes before Friday?" And the other girl said, well, you know what? Tomorrow, first thing in the morning, I think I'm going to get my desk cleaned up. And the girl said, what if she comes today? And finally, the second girl said, you know what? I think I'm going to clean up my desk right now and keep it clean. And as we think about our master teacher, Jesus, being out of the room, what do we do to stay ready? We get ready and we stay ready for him to enter the room. Number two, while the teacher is away, use your talents wisely. Use your talents wisely. In verses 14 through 30, we have the parable of the talents. A master, according to the theme of this chapter, leaves, and he leaves a little trust fund for three of his servants. Says, I'm going to leave you some money, and I want you to use this wisely. He's gone for a while, and he returns. And when he gets back, two of the servants have put the money that he left them to work. They put it to use. They invested it, and they made some money. They were complimented by the master at his return. The other, the third servant, was lazy, and he was afraid. And he buried the money under the ground. He buried the talents under the ground and did nothing with them. And that man was condemned by the master when the master returned. Now, talents have kind of meant different things over the years. Originally, it was a measure of weight, and then it was a measure of exchange, money. And then it became what it is to us today, talents meaning abilities, skills, things that we can do. And the message of this parable in verses 14 through 30 is clear. While the teacher is out of the room, use the abilities, the skills, the gifts that he has left you to bless others and build the church. Now, I don't know exactly what your talent or skill is. That's up to you. I don't know exactly how you can find a way to put it to use, to bless others and build up the church. But I know we've got lots of examples sitting around you of folks who are great at doing it. Right here in this congregation. We have people who are gifted and talented organizers and fundraisers. And they use those gifts for things like school supply drives and blood donation drives and help for the homeless and the needy in our area. We have people in this congregation who are talented writers and encouragers. And they have little informal card writing and letter writing ministries. And I'm the recipient of their ministry, and it means a lot to me. We have people who are talented cooks. They have a cooking ministry. On your birthday, you get a fried pie, or after a funeral, you get a delicious meal for your family as you meet together and grieve together. We have talented mechanics and carpenters and plumbers who use their gifts to help neighbors when things tear up. And they help us here at this church campus that we have when something breaks down or tears up, as it always does. They use their gifts to help in that way. We have talented caregivers who are constantly going to see about people in homes, in hospitals, in nursing homes, at the funeral home. We have talented musicians who lead us in our worship and song. We have people who are talented with technology, and they make sure that this works up here and that we get streaming online. And on and on. We have two guys here whose only appreciable skill really is running our mouth. Where's Rod? We got the gift of gab, but at least we'll stand up here and gab about God, right, Rod? Paul Rogers, I told Rodney this before the service. Paul Rogers always said, if you can do nothing else, preach. He said, try everything else, and if none of it works out, then do this. I know that's why I'm here. I won't speak for Rodney. But so you can look at all of these examples, and here's what you think about. How has God gifted me? Whatever gifts, whatever talents and skills God has given you, they're like a trust fund that Jesus left you when he left. And he said, use those gifts, use those talents wisely, not just for yourself, though you're going to support yourself with them for sure, but use them to bless others and build the church. While the master's away, use your time wisely. Use your talents wisely. Finally, use your treasures wisely. In verses 31 through 46, we have the parable of the sheep and the goats. In this parable, the master has been away and he comes back and he holds his students, we might say, his disciples accountable for what they did with their lives while he was gone. He separates the class into two groups. There are the sheep and the goats. The sheep did well and they are complimented. The goats did poorly and they are criticized and even condemned. What did the sheep do that was so well? What kind of behavior got these students recognized in a positive way when the teacher came back in the room? This is verse 35 of Matthew 25. Jesus says to the sheep, those who had done well, I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. And I was in prison and you came to visit me. And those who heard this compliment, they appreciated it, but they said to Jesus, we don't remember seeing you in all these situations. When did we see you hungry or thirsty or naked or in prison? And Jesus, of course, said, when you did it for any of these, you did it for me. What is the message here? The message, again, is clear. While the teacher is away, we are to be compassionately, actively, and generously concerned for those who are in need around us. There is the story of the starfish, and I know you've heard some version of this over the years. It goes back, best I could tell, to 1968 into a book of short stories written by a woman. But the starfish story goes like this. There was a little girl on the beach after a terrible storm had passed. The storm had washed thousands and thousands of starfish up onto the beach. And they were going to die if they couldn't somehow get back into the water, but they couldn't get there themselves. And so this little girl is on a beach, starfish as far as you can see that way and that way. And she's picking up one at a time and throwing them into the ocean so that they can live. A crowd of onlookers gathers and they're watching the girl and they have pity for her. And finally, one man walks down to her and says, honey, look around. You can't save all of these starfish. There are starfish as far as you can see for miles both ways. You can't make a difference. And the little girl reaches down and she gets a starfish and she looks at it. She tosses it into the water and she looks at him and says, I made a difference to that one. And the man is so inspired that he starts to get starfish and throw them. And the crowd is so inspired that they come down and they start throwing in starfish. And you know, before the day was over, the starfish were back out there in the water. While Jesus is away, will you do this? Will you just help the person in front of you? You don't have to get in on all this nonsense going on around us in our culture. Just be good to and compassionately concerned for the people who are right there in front of you. And could you imagine if we all would do that, how everything would just be taken care of? The teacher is away, and here's how we can live so that we get that pat on the head or that gold star. We can use our time wisely. We can use our talents, our gifts, and our abilities wisely. We can use our treasures wisely by using what we have to help those right there in front of us who have needs. Think about that little girl again who found out the principal was going to come and do an inspection of her desk. She said, here's my plan. I'm going to get ready and I'm going to stay ready. And can I tell you that that should be the plan of every person in this auditorium this morning when it comes to the second coming of Jesus? That teacher's coming back into the room and we need to get ready and then keep ourselves ready for his return. If you're not a baptized believer, then that is the very first thing you ought to be interested in doing. You ought to confess your faith, you ought to repent of your sins, and you ought to be baptized into Christ so that those sins can be washed away. And you come up out of that water and you're just ready to keep your life clean and keep your life pure and keep yourself ready for Jesus when he comes to take you home. If you've never done that, we invite you to do it. We're here to assist you as you're ready to do it. Come right now as together we stand and as we sing.